Has joined.
Good evening.
Has joined.
Good evening. Good evening.
Does anybody have a question?
I don't. This is Hannah.
I didn't hear whether you do or don't.
No, I don't have a question.
Anybody else?
Not really relating to whatever topic you guys have been talking about. But I do have a question about another topic.
That's fine, because there's no topic that's forbidden on this night. There's no topic ever for, but this Wednesday night we do questions and answers. It's like stump the rabbi, except I'm not a rabbi and I don't get stumped, and I do get stumped. So.
Okay, friend, perfect. The Erev Rav that came out of Egypt with the children of Israel.
Yes.
Today they are Erev Rav. So did they get that power for reincarnation today for the mere fact that they did get circumcised upon their exiting of Egypt?
Let's start over. They exited Egypt because Moses agreed to take them with him when Hashem said, recommended. So Moses decided to take them because he felt affinity with them. And there's a whole discussion in the Ari's writings about that affinity. I don't remember. You're saying that the Erev Rav was circumcised when they left Egypt? I don't remember that that was true because it's part of the process of conversion.
Yeah, basically the premise is here that we have, Erev Rav still today, even within the rabbinical
That's correct.
Group, and that reincarnated, but they're still against Kabbalah. They're still against mysticism. So is then the reason for that, perhaps, be because they did become circumcised at that time of the Exodus?
No, that's not the reason that they're against Kabbalah. That's the Zohar says that the rabbis of our generation, the final generation, there are five components. If you go on my website and what we discussed today, where you've heard the procedure to find the Zohar class we're working on,
mm-hmm.
In this one, go to the Parasha of Bereshit A, and go to section 20, and there's five verses there from the Zohar that explains the five components of the Erev Rav. The most significant and most difficult for the Jewish nation is that of Amalek. That's one of the components of the Erev Rav. Another component of why they become rabbis is they are seeking honor. They are seeking people. They're seeking to be a leader without warranting being leaders. They're looking for to be respected, to be honored. That's why they become rabbis. That is their motivation. It has nothing to do with whether they were circumcised or not. The only one who can really complain about being circumcised is the 8-day-old baby, because he's not aware that he's agreeing. Of course, he is agreeing on the spiritual level, or it wouldn't happen.
Okay. Is there such a thing, though, as people who nowadays who are never circumcised, who are so against Kabbalah, the fact that they are not circumcised, also like a veil over their eyes? That's completely opposite.
The whole idea of the circumcision is the foreskin represents the Satan waiting at the opening. The sperm is the greatest revelation of light in the physical world, because it potentially brings children. That's a revelation of light, is life. So the foreskin is essentially representing the negative system who sits at the door. as the verses in Psalms and Proverbs say, sin crouches at the door. This is a hint to the negative system. Satan is waiting for his share at any given opening, which is why the word for the vagina is rechem, and if you go one letter to the left, it brings you to Satan. The whole idea is any opening, there is part of the negative system that is
has joined
to share in light.
Okay.
That's what it's all about. That's why we put a mezuzah there, because that's an opening. The opening is the mezuzah protects you from that negative system that's waiting for you at the door, so that when you walk out of your house, it attaches itself to you. But with the mezuzah there, it doesn't. The mezuzah sends it away, because the mezuzah is revealing light, and the negative system cannot handle the light. That's why it's a klipah. That's why it's a shell. If it could handle the light, it would get closer and come inside the form, the body.
Okay.
The only difference between a klipah and a human soul is that the human soul has the ability to reveal the light. The klipah cannot handle that much energy, and therefore it has to be outside the form.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions or comments or thoughts? So am I in trouble for bringing up the idea that the one letter to the right of Satan is a woman's vagina? That's a joke?
No.
No.
I'm always in trouble for being a chauvinist.
And we're used to jokes about women. Doesn't bother us.
Well, I'll just remind myself what my mother told me, that the women's talk in the bathroom is much more severe than the men's.
Well, I was thinking of the blonde-headed jokes.
That'll work, too. Does anybody else have any questions or comments they want to add?
I have another one.
Oh.
Just one a short comment.
Go ahead, Brandy. And then I'm not sure who was the other person, but go ahead.
If they have men that are chauvinists, can women be chauvinists too? Because it seems the more I learn about men, the less I like them.
That's absolutely a good choice.
It seems they're always getting us women in trouble.
Oh, no, you can't go there, Brandy. Who's the cause and who's the effect? If a woman is in trouble, is it the man's fault?
Yes, one definitely, 100%. Absolutely.
Well, if a man is walking in the forest and the tree falls, does his wife still say he's wrong?
Yes. Because he shouldn't have been walking in the forest. He should have been home helping her do something.
Especially during Passover week. I read that when Mashiach comes, this is a midrash, of course, that he's going to add 30 more mitzvot. And I thought, oh, I bet I know what number one is going to be. Women don't have to do all that work for Passover. It's
going to change to the, it's going to be the man that I have to do it. I'm joking.
Well, but you do know that the Rosh Chodesh is a woman's holiday.
Yes.
Where she's not supposed to cook her husband dinner.
Right. But I'd rather have it at Passover than once a month.
There was somebody who wanted to say something when Brandy was saying her comment. So, and I didn't recognize the voice. So please go ahead.
It's all good. Is that I agree with you as far as the claim. I've already started, so, and it seems like a long time to get ready, but I think I'd rather have it actually a little bit every day, so otherwise it's too much. But you're right, absolutely right.
I do feel even better knowing that we've gone through two hurricanes and a snowstorm. So we're still dealing with all of that besides Passover, so.
Are you in Texas?
No, or Louisiana.
Louisiana? Well, that's close enough. Yeah.
Well, I'm in Texas.
You're in Texas?
I thought I'd let you speak for yourself, Brandy.
Yeah, speak for myself, huh? Yeah, I'm in Texas.
Well, one of you is in one side of Texas and the other's in the other side of Texas.
Yep, and we have a river between us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in Shemot 14, the Red Sea crossing, when Moshe is, you know, they're at the edge, and he starts crying out, and Hashem says to him, "Why are you crying out to me?"
Right.
I find it interesting because some people would say, oh, that's that God that is drastic, you know, that doesn't really care. I've heard these comments, okay? But I find it really interesting because it's like Hashem is actually empowering him, and he tells him, you know, lift up your rod, lift up your hand. And so the question is, somebody made a mention that's the 10 sephirot. You know, that's, but then they mixed it in with Metatron.
We don't say his name. Memtet is understandable.
Memtet. Okay, thank you. And so is that true? Is that, to me, I see it. I'm like, okay, I've got 5 digits in one hand, 5 digits on the other hand. So is that true?
You're talking about chapter 14, verse 15 in Exodus, correct?
15. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15
okay.
through 16.
Got it. The answer to your question is that true? The midrash, there are many different midrashim. So one of the midrash says that it is the 10 sephirot. Another midrash says that on one side of his staff was engraved the 72 names of God, and the other side of his staff had the Membet, the Anabakoach, engraved, without the words, but just the letters. And so those were the tools that were used to split the sea. And when God said, "Why are you crying to me?" the unsaid statement was, "I've given you the tools, use them." And then he directs Moses to start moving forward into the sea. And only one person out of the 600,000 went into the sea. According to the Midrash, that was Nachshon ben Aminadab, which we had on first Rosh Chodesh Nisan. He's the leader of the tribe of Yehuda when they left Egypt. And as such, he went forward, and the description in the Midrash is he took a step and the water came to his knees, and he took another step and it came to his hips, And he kept walking step after step, and it got to his chest, and then it got to his neck, and then it went to his chin, and then it went above his mouth. And just as he was going to put his nose under the water, being the next step, it would have been up to his over his nose, that's when the water split. And the teaching of this, that whole incident, why are you crying to me, is the issue of certainty. Teaching us to have certainty. Teaching us that we have all of the tools we need to control our lives if we would just use them. But we have to have certainty, because the gasoline that powers the tools is the amount of certainty in the mercy and in the love of Hashem.
Hashem. Yeah, so when I confront a difficult situation, whatever it is, I can just transpose myself to that instance, and I find it very appropriate that I have a tool.
You have the tools, and you power those tools with certainty that you know they will work. Most people don't have certainty. Most people will have faith. Most people will have trust. Faith is a form of belief which expresses a certain element of doubt. Trust, when Hashem doesn't do what you want him to do, you prayed to him, you said it's going to happen, and it didn't happen. So, have you changed your mind? That's the level of trust. Certainty is to knowing. The example, the metaphor I use in the basic class, if I'm holding a pencil and I drop it, will it fall to the floor or the table or whatever's underneath it? When it leaves my hand, will it fall? And of course, the answer that everyone says, yes, of course it will fall. And then I ask them, do you believe it will fall? And they almost always answer, no, I know it will fall. I don't believe it will fall. So why do you say you believe in God? You're saying that you have doubt when you say the word, I believe in God. You have to experience God just as you've experienced gravity every second of your life. You have to experience God every second of your life. That's the issue. To know God, you have to experience God. And to experience God, you have to use the tools.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Or did I scare everybody else off with my chauvinism? That's a joke, just in case anybody's not sure.
We're here. We're just listening.
I know. There can never be an end to the development of certainty, because that next event that you think it's going to happen, you know it's going to happen the way you want it to, and it doesn't. The reason it doesn't is unclear to you. But the fact that it doesn't is a test. Will you grow your certainty, or will you let it slide? there are many, I don't want to say many, there probably are many people, but there's a particular righteous woman who lives in Jerusalem. And the wealthy Israeli men left the land of Israel, meaning the land vomited them out, and they came to America, and they made a fortune. And they're running this huge business. And they refuse to make any business decision without calling Israel and asking this righteous woman what they should do. Do they have certainty? Yeah, they have certainty in her. They don't have certainty in Hashem. This is what idols are. Does she realize that her statements are being manifested by Hashem? And look, their business has been successful. They do a lot of philanthropy. They do a lot of tzedakah and truma. They're doing good, right things. They do mitzvot. They do good deeds. So Hashem is fine with them having an idol, one of his tzedekets, one of his tzedekim, his righteous people. But Hashem wants us to grow individually by ourselves, so that we have certainty in his goodness, so that when it doesn't happen, when they ask her advice and the advice is incorrect, what does that mean? It means that the way they want it to come out, it doesn't come out that way. When that happens, what do they do with their certainty? Is it her? Was she the one that was the mistake? It's all a test. Because Hashem wants them to make that connection themselves. We are taught, throughout the centuries, we've been taught, you have to choose a rabbi. What does that mean? Oh, choose a person that you are going to follow because he is righteous or she's righteous, and they're revealing light, and so they know because they're on a higher level than you. I can't make the statement, don't have a rabbi. I'm not a rabbi. I am a spiritual leader, whatever that means, and it's different for different levels. But ultimately, my students have to learn to do on their own. Yes, they can call me for advice, and they should. But the decision cannot be mine. If you ever get to the point that you're asking me, and I'm saying, making a suggestion, and you're accepting that a suggestion because it's coming from me, we're both making mistakes. Call me, I will give you advice, I will make suggestions, but the decision has to be yours. Because if it doesn't work out and the chaos begins, can you point at me and say it's my fault? Or do you have to accept your responsibility, Brandy? But just for the record, your attitude towards men is very healthy.
Thank you.
Well, you have to
once by the fire, you're a little bit reluctant to touch the fire again. Maybe that's a good one.
No, I don't think I'm reluctant to touch the fire. I think I've walked through the fire several times, and I'm just not up to getting burnt again.
Well, that's what I said. You're reluctant to touch the fire again.
There you go.
That's another test. So you go around the circle or around the oval.
But this time you have a better perspective on cause and effect than you've had before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So are you supposed to be involved with this man?
No, I don't have a man. I was just talking about men in general.
Somehow, the issue is, that, as you said, the more you know about men, the more you don't like them.
And that is the truth.
Well, I will tell you what my therapist told me when I was going through my divorce. And I said to him, I love that woman, but I don't like her. And he just said politely and calmly, in order to love someone, you have to like them.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're not liking men, you're making sure that you can't grow in love. You notice I didn't say fall in love, because that's the misnomer. People don't fall in love. They grow in love.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's all right. A marriage, the perfect marriage is one where love grows, not falls.
I really think that people don't fall in love, they fall in lust. And they mistake the lust for love. And then
that's not true of everyone.
And when they fall out of that, there's not anything there.
And how many people, when the children leave the nest, it's time for the divorce because there's nothing in common with them anymore.
That's right. I know a lot of those people.
Ultimately, you grow in love day by day. You ask somebody who's been married 65 years, 50 years, 40 years, and they will tell you that their love has grown day after day.
My mom and dad were married 60 years, and he loved her, and she loved him. Now, there were trying moments between them, but there is with everybody.
That's true, and we live in a different generation today. I will tell you, there's a wonderful couple who truly love each other. They've been married 67 years.
Wow.
And they moved into this independent living facility, and as soon as there was another apartment open, they split up, and they're one's on the eighth floor and one's on the first floor. And they still have dinner together every night.
And they're probably happier.
Well, the only way they can stay together is being on the different floors.
Well, that's the truth.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
That is the truth, because I've known lots of ladies that their husbands shipped out. Their jobs were on some type of a ship, you know, a vessel working for a company or whatever. And their husbands would be gone for X number of times, a month, 2 months. And then they would come back and they would stay for, I don't know, maybe a month or something like that. And both of the people, the couple, he and her were happy, and they just had to tolerate each other for a month. And both of, and he was glad to get back to sea, and she was glad to see him go to sea.
Well, we've been married 62.
The wrong bomb put down in writing, depending on your occupancy, is the amount, the frequency of your intimacy. Which gets back to your idea that they fall in lust.
Right.
I guess there's no more questions. Shalom Gadol to everyone. Have a beautiful evening.
Okay.
Shalom.
Remember tomorrow's classes.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you said that the tomorrow's classes what?
Yeah. Normally I tell at the end of every class, I remind people the class is coming up. So tomorrow there's four classes, which is really five, which tomorrow we have the morning class where we do the Aliyah. That's at 7 o'clock West Coast time.
Right.
And then at 8 o'clock West Coast time, we're doing the connection to the month of Tammuz for the fourth day of Nisan. And then at 11 o'clock, we have a class in the Sefer Yetzirah. At 4:30, we have a deep Zohar class continuing what we had today. And at 7 o'clock, we will have a Zohar class for the Parasha of Vayikra.
Okay. Perfecto mundo. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. You all be well.
Shalom. All right.
Shalom. Shalom Gadol.
Shalom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.